The moon has come right here to Australia. Oh, you might think that sounds a little bonkers, but it's real. UK artist Luke Jerram is moving the moon around the world in the name of art. The internationally acclaimed artist has brought a 7-metre-wide floating moon sculpture to Science Works in Melbourne after it came to the Gold Coast for the Commonwealth Games last year. I spoke to Luke at the time and asked him to explain what the Museum of the Moon actually is.
So this is primarily a sculpture, a three-dimensional sphere. It's actually just a balloon, but on the outside it's printed with a 5.5 gigabyte image from NASA. So every crater, every valley, every mountain is defined in perfect detail, printed onto the outside of this sphere. And then it's internally lit. And so what there's this sort of wonderful moment that happens that in the evening, that it suddenly it looks like it has this incredible texture. And people look at this artwork, 7-metre diameter artwork that's floating in front of them, and they say, how did you do that? And is it made of concrete, or is it made of fiberglass or paper mache? What, how? And the moon has inspired so much mythology, it's impacted religion, literature, music, right around the world. So, and the interpretation, the meaning of the moon varies from one culture to another. So I'm touring this artwork around the world and comparing one with the other and collecting all these lovely stories and events beneath them. So that's basically the artwork, but it's a very beautiful thing, and I'm quite pleased with it.
Well, Luke, as indeed you should be, and I think more artists should say that about their work, that they're quite pleased with it. That's really wonderful. What actually gave you the very original idea?
Yeah, I'm from Bristol in England, and there we have a 13-metre tidal difference, a difference between high tide and low tide.
Wow!
Which is like the second highest in the world. So it's huge. So I'd be cycling to work over the river on my bike, and I'd look down, and it would just be mud. And then about 3 days later, 3 hours later, suddenly the river is completely full, 10 metres higher.
Which river is it, Luke?
This is the River Avon. And it, of course, it's the moon that's making that happen, the tidal variation. Mm. As well as the geography of the land that's altering this tide to such a huge degree. And that's really where the idea came from. But that was 15 years ago. And back then, I didn't have the sort of experience necessary, but also the data wasn't available to be able to make this artwork. And the printing technology wasn't, I'm using a printer that's about the size of a large caravan to produce the imagery that we need.
Wow. How big is each of the images that you then put onto the moon?
Yeah, so the imagery has come from NASA, and they sent a satellite around and around and around the outside of the moon, taking thousands of photographs, and all those have sort of been stitched together, so it's completely seamless.
Right. How did you get access to that imagery?
They made it freely available. That's the nice thing about NASA is a lot of that data is then freely available on the internet. And so the moon that I've made is 500,000 times smaller than the real thing. And so every centimetre represents 5 kilometres. So, right. Yeah, Sydney is going to be, I don't know, about 5 or 10 centimetres across.
Okay. Oh, that's, I think, a good size.
Yeah, I mean, it's a beautiful thing. It also provides an opportunity for people to go round the back of the moon and see the dark side of the moon for the first time as well.
Yes, of course.
So a lot of amateur astronomers get very excited, because the thing is with the moon, when you look up at the sky, you can only see one side of it. The moon always faces the Earth in the same direction. So this is an opportunity for people to go around the back and have a look.
Yes, although I suppose being in Australia and being in England, you are seeing slightly different aspects of the moon.
Yeah, for me, when I come to Australia, the moon's upside down. So interestingly, on the Northern Hemisphere, certainly in Europe, when we look at the moon, we can see what we think is a man on the moon. We see a face in the moon. Whereas if you go to, say, Asia, the moon is orientated differently, so it's sort of twisted around, and they have all sorts of mythologies and stories about the rabbit or the hare in the moon, created by the dark patches that you can see on the surface. So wherever you go, the moon looks different, and there's a set of mythologies and stories that go with it. So I know in New Zealand there's a story about a young girl who is collecting water at night with a bucket. And the moon, she's collecting the moon by, collecting the water by moonlight, and a cloud comes across the surface of the moon, And she stumbles because she can't see where she's going. She drops the bucket and the water goes all over the place. Anyway, she curses the moon, which is a bad thing to do. So the moon abducts her. And now, if you're in New Zealand, there's mythologies, as far as I understand, that if you look up at the moon, you can see a girl sitting underneath a tree holding a bucket of water.
Ah, wonderful. Where did you take it to first?
Well, I tried to present it in Bristol. Bristol is the sort of European ballooning capital, and there's a big hot air balloon festival, and I put it there. And the first attempt was helium-filled, and it was too windy, and the damn thing popped.
Oh, Luke, no!
Which, after 6 months of planning,
oh,
it was a bit, you know...
How much money had it cost to actually get it made?
A chunk. A fair chunk.
Oh, Luke!
And but you know, when you're doing something new, it involves taking a risk, and there's often a steep learning curve.
Yeah, I mean, there's risks in science, and there's risks in art.
It's exactly the same.
You combine the two,
and you have to take risks and do these things. So since then, I've only been touring and presenting air-filled moons, and it's a much easier thing to do.
Okay, where did you take it after it had exploded in Bristol, and once you'd remade it?
It then went up to the Lake District. We put it in a cathedral and a small church, and then it went. We've suspended it above a swimming pool in France. That was very beautiful. So you could actually swim out underneath the moon at night, and that's really cool. The nice thing with this art project is wherever you present it, the interpretation is slightly different. So you put it in a church or a cathedral, people think about it in relation to God. And whereas if you put it in a science museum, people think about it in a very scientific way. You could put it in a light festival, or you take it to China. You know, the interpretation shifts dramatically depending on where you put it. So I'm sort of interested in that kind of context and that interpretation.
Yes. How do you invite people's interpretations? How do people contribute to the exhibition?
Well, generally what happens is the public just turn up in their droves and they get out their mobile phones and start doing all these selfies, you know, like you do when you see the Eiffel Tower, people holding it up. You know, there's a lot of that that goes on.
Yeah.
It's one of those art projects that people, like to photograph themselves with. people lying out underneath it as well. So moon bathing. We presented it in France and we put out a load of deck chairs in a big arch, so people could sit under the moon and moonbathe. And half an hour later, I went back, and all those deck chairs had been put into pairs, and they were with couples suddenly sitting on them, holding hands, sort of moonbathing romantically.
How beautiful.
It was really nice. And then in Bristol, we presented it, and this little girl came up to me, and she said, will you put the moon back afterwards? So she thought I'd stolen the real moon and put it, you know, it's just adorable.
What did you say?
I will definitely put the moon back afterwards.
Oh, good. I'm glad you did, Luke.
Yeah. And we had these four guys who turned up in spacesuits, and they arrived to the exhibition in slow motion, and they sort of floated almost over, and they lay out underneath the moon for 2 hours, and then they walked out in slow motion afterwards. It was great.
Oh, that's very entertaining. Now, Luke, we've got a little bit of the music now, so let's just check this out.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills, because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win, and the others do.
The music that you use in the exhibition with Museum of the Moon, obviously, you know, there's a lot of music written about the moon. Claire de Lune by Debussy, Beethoven Moonlight Sonata, and what an iconic piece of music. How did you work with the composer to create the music?
So I've known Dan Jones for many years. So we worked on a number of different art projects, and Dan is now incredibly successful. He's got his BAFTA and two Ivor Novellos now.
Oh, great.
And we've had a long, you know, working relationship, and I gave him a call, laid out a kind of brief, and just let him get on with it, really. And so that piece of music, it's a 23-minute long piece of music that's played on a loop when there are no other sort of events taking place beneath the moon. So the moon acts as this opportunity really for curators and programmers to program events beneath it. So we've had choirs singing beneath the moon, and we've had astronomy lectures, and we've had theatre and dance, and even synchronized swimming underneath the moon as well.
Great.
When I try to make artwork, I try to make these art projects that give space for other people to be creative. And that's one of the things I've learnt to do, is just create artwork that where other people can be creative and bring something to it. So I'm known around the world for installing street pianos in cities for people to play.
Ah, you're the guy who does that.
Yeah, that's right. So it involves putting 20 or 30 pianos that are often decorated by local artists in cities, and then anyone of the member of the public can sit down and play those pianos. So we've presented it in Adelaide, I think 2010.
Yes, I remember that.
Perth, maybe 2 years ago, Sydney and Melbourne.
So it's true public art, actually.
Yeah. There's something about making art that everyone gets to enjoy. There are lots of people who feel slightly intimidated about going into an opera house, perhaps, or going into an art centre. Whereas the thing is, I quite actually like delivering art projects for everybody. And the thing is with Play Me, I'm Yours is we're literally taking an artistic opportunity and delivering it directly to their street or their neighbourhood where they live. So they don't have to traipse for, an hour to get into the town, to pay a ticket to go into. All these sort of barriers. So something about making artwork for everyone is really important for me.
Do you sort of have a sense of your power as an artist creating these things?
Well, I've been working now as an artist for 20 years, and every now and again I come up with an art project that just sort of hits a nerve, and if you're lucky, it can really change things. So the street piano project, for instance, now we've installed 1,900 pianos in about 60 cities worldwide, but it's also been copied lots of times as well. So the project has now sort of become part of culture. You see pianos in airports and train stations now worldwide, and it's led to all sorts of amazing things. So people have, met for the first time over a piano and got married. It's led to 6 or 7 marriages now.
Did they invite you to their wedding?
Yeah. They were.
Out of here.
Two journalists from the Sydney, two different newspapers in Sydney. They met over a piano in Taylor Square, I think it was. And they just fell in love, got married, and they invited me to their wedding. It's very cute. It's led to changes in the UK music licensing laws. So it was raised in the House of Lords, the problem of having a license for every piano that we tried to install in London. So now they've changed the UK law, so you now no longer need a license to put a piano on a street.
Great. So I hope you've got one on the street outside the Houses of Parliament now.
There's three pianos now in St Pancras Station that people really enjoy. In fact, a guy there, he was sort of playing, and he just arrived into London, wanted to make it as a musician. He was living in a local youth hostel and playing this piano every day. He had a tap on the shoulder and someone offered him a recording contract. So I quite like those art projects that can change people's lives. That we live in these cities, and these are our cities, and it's up to us to sort of imagine how we want to use them, and it's up to us to imagine their future.
Luke, thank you so much for speaking to me here on the Hub on Art. And I can't wait to see the moon and listen to the music and look at everybody sharing your ideas of fun and play and love and kindness in the world. Thank you so much for your work and for coming here to Australia.
Oh, you're quite welcome. It's lovely to speak with you. Thanks very much.
British artist Luke Jerram and his project Museum of the Moon was exhibited as part of the Commonwealth Games on the Gold Coast last year. And right now, it's at Science Works in Melbourne until the end of April. He has several moons touring simultaneously, so you'll be able to see one in Perth at Joondalup Festival in April as well.